You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, good morning and welcome. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You're with me today on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4573-4BREAD-4. So yesterday came the news that, who is the man? The man who created SpongeBob, Steven Hellenberg, evidently was diagnosed with ALS. This is going to fit perfectly into the week of the child that we are almost at the close of, the week of the child. And in this week of the child, you do not have to have young children who are facing a diagnosis of ADHD or OCD or are having problems in school or who aren't having problems in school. Any age child. And also reflecting back on you. You may not remember you, but there's someone out there who probably does remember you. You may have heard stories in the family. You may have, maybe you have a diary, maybe something that gives you clues and insight into who you are, where you were at, where you develop, what is inside of you. So often, well, I'm not going to say so often, I'm going to say all the time, as we begin human life, God knitted us in the womb. So we have no womb frame of reference. We have no earthly frame of reference. We've never walked the earth before. We never started. We never breathed air. But we are ethereal beings. If he knitted us and we house the Holy Spirit, somehow we are way bigger than just getting born and walking this earth in a flesh suit, right? So yesterday, I was just logging on to my email and I saw that this gentleman, and I just saw a little picture of SpongeBob, and I really don't watch SpongeBob, but I always loved the thought that it was some kind of cartoon created under the sea. Now, I have no idea. It could be something you would never show, let your kids see. I don't know, but it certainly has been around a long time. So I thought this is, you know, I kind of wanted to see. This guy looked young, diagnosed with ALS, and wanted to see, just kind of like, I don't know, caused me to look a little bit into this. And it was really fascinating, and it really works into our conversation today, because I'm going to finish up with this concept that we were talking about yesterday with Stephen Fry, and how this very famous and very accomplished gentleman, Stephen Fry, actor, comedian, writer, filmmaker, documentary, how he talked about his own brush with suicide and a suicide attempt, but also with his history of being bipolar, which he refers to as manic depressive, which is the old term for it. So if you know people in your family that say that they were manic depressive, they are saying that they were exhibiting symptoms that we now put into the bipolar. We have that as a spectrum too. Everything's a spectrum these days. So backing up now to this gentleman, Mr. Hellenberg. So evidently, I thought, well, who even is he? I was fascinated. And I saw a little interview on YouTube. He was being interviewed by, maybe it was just like a little documentary about him as he's walking through the halls of his SpongeBob office where he creates SpongeBob. He was an oceanographer or some kind of marine biologist. That was his training. That's where he went to school. Now, I will tell you, there was a time way back in my early college days where I thought that's what I wanted to do. And whatever guided me away from that, it may have just been something that maybe should never have guided me away. Who knows? I am who I am, and I've taken the path I've taken. But I remember sitting after a terrible bout of final exams in some courses I was taking, probably liberal arts undergraduate courses. And this very handsome guy comes in. That's an interesting sound. This very interesting guy comes in. He's very handsome, and I'd seen him before. And he looked like your typical picture of a marine biologist with the sweater. And he might have even had, I mean, in my imagination, he has a pipe, but he probably didn't have a pipe. But anyway, but I was just fascinated because I said, oh my gosh, I'm thinking of that too. It must be so exciting. And he was saying, well, really, it's not exciting because everything is science, where the people that really get to go out and do the real romantic type work are very few and far between. Many of us are in the labs. We're looking at specimens and samples. We're scientists. We're biologists. So here's a man who we could look at and say, this Hellenberg, we can look at and say he started out as a scientist. He's a scientist. This is where he put his energy. This is where he went to school. But he also showed, there was a picture, he showed this little pamphlet that he had drawn when he was trying to teach about the ecosystem and about undersea life and all the different things in a tide pool. And he had this wonderful little pamphlet that he had drawn. And when you look at it, you can see that's the template for SpongeBob. And somehow he, and I don't remember now because I only saw it a couple minutes before I had to start preparing yesterday, but somehow he ran across someone that either encouraged him or suggested he might want to look into publishing this little pamphlet, something that caused him to just begin a little road into drawing. And then he started to take classes in Southern California at some school up probably in the LA area, I think. And lo and behold, later on, we know him as the creator of SpongeBob. Now, showing how creative minds work, there's a man, Jules Engel, who I really don't even know who he is. He just looks like a very non-assuming older gentleman. He has a very thick accent, which I really didn't go into him much, so I don't really know where he's from. And he is somehow affiliated with SpongeBob and the beginnings of the whole thing. And he was talking about how, and his accent is super, super thick. And he was talking about how he had walked into this apartment that he was renting, and the painter of the apartment, just the wall painter, the painter, not the artistic painter, had put up a little makeshift sign in paint that said wet paint. And this man, Jules Engel, was captivated by this makeshift sign. Now, I'm showing you this to show you how these extraordinary people, how their minds work. Most of us would go wet paint, and we would just know it's a warning to work, to be careful about the paint in our apartments or our houses. But it captivated him. This sign captivated him, and it became a cornerstone. It became a backdrop to SpongeBob. And I've only seen SpongeBob a couple times in my entire life, and I remember seeing that wet paint sign. And of course, it's funny to me and ironic because it's in the ocean. So, you know, but the concept here is these minds and these brains, people who, I don't know what Mr. Hellenberg's past was. I'm anxious to look into it, to look at his biography. I'm sure it's on Wikipedia, where he grew up, who his parents were, what they did for livings, what his trajectory was, how he went to school, whether he flunked out, whether he didn't flunk out, all these great things. It's great to look at Wikipedia and see those things, because you'll see these people who grew up in your neighborhoods. They grew up just like you, and they are you, and they are your children, and they will help you to not grasp the snapshot of what your child is this minute or what you are this minute. They will grasp you to embrace how you are carried away by a wet paint sign or by something on a sidewalk. Or when you take your feet and you are at the ocean or at a lake and the little tiny tide or the great big tide goes in and goes out and you see the patterns that it makes with your feet. Some people are captivated for hours with that. So you don't feel like the urge that you have to partake in this beautiful earth and your beautiful brain that God uses and utilizes, that this beautiful utilization of your brain, that it's waiting for you. It's the garden. And in it are all kinds of things. And even the weeds in that garden are beautiful. There's no difference. We just call them weeds. I look at this beautiful slope that I have in the little place that I have, and it just slopes up. They concreted in all the rest of it, I guess, for ease and not having to deal with grass and because it's a drought-ridden area. But the slope, because of all the rains, is filled with flowers. It's filled with lilies and daisies and limes and trumpet vines and yucca and palm and apple. Right there in this little tiny patch. And all around it are weeds. Weeds everywhere, but they're beautiful. They fill in the spaces. They've got their own little flowers. And they'll be pulled out at some point, I'm sure. But they're still beautiful. There's no difference in them. Just like a beautiful invasive flower that one person may have in a garden somewhere in the country, in another part of the country, it will grow rampant. So all of this creation in your brain is a beautiful garden. We're going to revisit that. I'm going to talk to you a little bit more about Mr. Engel, and then we'll get on to Mr. Fry as well and talk about the week of the child and your child's unique and beautiful brain.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are listening to me today on Dr. Michelle Live, and you are with me and walking every single day with me on Dr. Michelle Live. 573-4BREAD-4 is our telephone number to either text or call. You can email me anytime, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. You can also go to our website, breadboxmedia.com, become friend of the show, and you can also log on to breadboxmedia.podbean.com to find archives, past podcasts that you can listen to anytime. You can download them. Sometimes we, like this week, it's a theme. Started out with the idea for the theme of this week, the week of the child, because a family member had a diagnosis for their child that was troubling somewhere along the autistic spectrum. The child is very, very young, still a toddler. So it's a troubling thing. Is it real? Is it not real? How do we go about becoming our own anthropologist into our own family to find out whether our family culture supports this diagnosis of the individual or whether we might just be helping to create symptoms that look like this diagnosis that we can then back up and maybe tweak a little bit and change and undo this? So sometimes you can, sometimes you can't, but the people on the outside of your world only see what they show you or what you show them. They can't possibly go into the inner workings of your mind or what kind of template you are, where, you know, the apple does not fall far from the tree, right? I remember thinking when I first heard that, what does that even mean? This was a long time ago, but now I get what it means. The apple does not fall far from the tree. Your children, you are the template for your children. So whoever you are, you will not have exact replicas, but there is a very good chance that sure enough, as you see someone, you have a child, let's say you have several children. So you have a child who does not follow your way at all, does not seem to think like you, act like you, doesn't process like you. Their complement of all the genetic material that you have brought forth into this world may be a combination that's showing up quite different than you ever did. However, there also might be the other side of the coin where you bring forth a child who seems like a clone of you, even though it was only 50% of you. So it's not ever just 50% of two individual random people. It is a collection and an expression of the history of the earth that's coming through this particular child. And every child in their own right is Beethoven, Mozart, just maybe not in music, and again, not in their own lifetime even. We just don't know, so we cannot pigeonhole. It's just very easy to do. So this gentleman, Jules Engel, that I was talking about, what he said was, ideas are everywhere if you are aware of them. Most people would just walk by a wet paint sign, but I looked at it and it opened up a whole new vision for him or for me. I'm paraphrasing him, so I better back up and say he did say that ideas are everywhere if we are aware of them. And most people would just walk by a wet paint sign. But see, he didn't. To him, it captivated him. He said it was the most beautiful thing. He was completely captivated. Now, if your pre-kindergartner, preschooler, walked up and just stared at that sign while all the other kids on their way to Disneyland and all the other kids are running and laughing and can't wait to get in to see Mickey Mouse, and your child is standing there captivated by a wet paint sign, what are you going to make of that? Do you take that as another part on the list that they may be part of some kind of pathology? I'm not downplaying the role of our beautiful, amazing medical world. We keep people alive and we help people like no other time in history. But at the same time, it's always this balance. There was an old Seinfeld once that talked about the old saying, even Steven. And the whole episode was about the little saying, even Steven. And even Steven is some kind of I have to look it up, probably some kind of little nursery rhyme or something that goes that no matter, it's kind of for every up, there is a down. Every you get $10, you lose $10. You make this stride, you lose that. You find out about how to make, amazing factories and you end up with polluting oceans. Just reading today about the Great Barrier Reef in Australia, and they're putting it up to global warming, which it might be, but why do we have it? Because of the great coal pollution into the oceans, because the whole globe is warming, because it's really something about where we sit in the universe and how close we are to the sun. I really don't know, but all I know is that they're finding this certain die-off that's happening. Maybe the die-off happens every 5 million years. Who knows? I don't know. The scientists know. But it seems like we always have this kind of up and down, so we can get carried away because we are so completely finite and we really think in our little frame of reference. So I found him fascinating. I found the concept of this Steven, the creator of SpongeBob, fascinating because he is facing at a very young age ALS and he's in his 50s. But also if I trace him back, and I would love to go, I'm going to go look more about maybe I'll do that over the break, look at his, just his little biography from Wikipedia. Very, very helpful to find out that this person started on a trajectory that would never have led him or his parents to thinking that he would one day be a creator of a cartoon of a sponge. I mean, really, if your child came to you today and said, I have this idea of making this creation about a sponge, and I want to spend all my time on it, an undersea sponge. You as a good, loving parent would say, you know, well, maybe you better get a day job too. Maybe we better get you, you know, maybe you better think about school. Now, he did go to school. Not only did he go to school in marine biology, but he also went to art school. He also learned, he talked about this in his interview, how he learned how to do cartooning and how he learned about timing and he learned about phrasing and he learned about all this. So that was very helpful, obviously. But you just don't think in the very onset of life, yes, darling, this is a great idea. Why don't you spend all your life pursuing a cartoon about a sponge? Now, there's a way to do this. I'm being sarcastic, of course. And he didn't have this early on in life. Or maybe he did. Maybe he was a very creative child. But the point here being, all of this being, while I'm just meandering around SpongeBob, is because I want you to open your eyes. Open your eyes to being human. We read yesterday even a biblical quote, which I thought was very, very beautiful, about, it was from John, about that we are already God's children, but we have not been shown what it is like and what we're going to be when Christ appears. And that we do know that we will be like him. And we will also see him as he really is. So we're going to be like the glowing man on the mountain. I mean, if you took this in terms of superhero, it would be an amazing cartoon that you would take your kids to see. The glowing man on the mountain. I mean, when Jesus went to Mount Tabor, he glowed. I mean, he emanated, he radiated radiation. He glowed. To where he freaked out the apostles, he came through his own skin, and everything changed. We're going to see him for who he really is, which will be very, how can I even imagine that? I can't. And we're going to be like him. So therefore, these amazing things that we can't even understand, our eyes will be open to, but we are able to have glimpses right now into this beauty that we call humanity, and this beauty that has untapped potential, these people that I never even heard of before yesterday, Jules Engel, who, if I saw him at Kroger getting, you know, veggie juice or something, I would never even think twice. I might say, hi, or you go ahead of me. I would never think, oh, there's a man there's a kind of man who would be so inspired by a wet paint sign that it was incorporated into one of the most long-running and famous cartoon series that we've known about a sponge. I mean, really, when you think about it, I'm just like going on and on and on. All right, so we're going to run out of time this segment. I promise you, we're going to get back to some real, real people, real issues. But I'm just blown away. I love it. I love it. It just makes me laugh. And it's just so amazing. And I want you to have that joy and humor, too, when you look at in the face of all these, these hardships that we face. And again, I'm laughing because during a time when it was only a few days ago that the whole family received this notice about this diagnosis. So this is Dr. Michelle. Get your coffee, get your juice, get your veggie juice, get your water, get your favorite SpongeBob watch, and I will see you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You're walking with me today on this beautiful rambling hillside of thoughts about children development, child of the week. We're still continuing. We have two more days and probably, you know, it's always week of the child. It's always week of the child because inside of us is the child that we've always been. And so we're not just, you know, oh, that little child within. We're always all of us. We are always all of us. You're not going to unring the bell of your life. It's just not going to happen. You are woven continually. And so all of you comes with all of you all the time. So how's that? Anyway, so talking about this Steven Hillenburg, who is was in the news because he was diagnosed with ALS. And he's in his 50s. His early life, which was interesting, he was born at a United States Army post in Oklahoma. So his father was working for the military. His mother taught visually impaired students. And when he was a year old, the family moved to Orange County, California. So that's cool. A lot of people who grow up in that industry or, you know, move to California with their parents. I mean, this is a place where people migrated, especially during those times after following World War II. So his father started a career in aerospace, in the aerospace program. And in fact, one of his brothers also followed that same path. He really didn't know what he didn't see himself as an exceptional child. He used to watch, remember that the Jacques Cousteau, which was, he had so many documentaries on the life under the sea, and his son, I think one of his sons was tragically killed, but, he had his family helped him. And one of his sons went on to do the same thing, but he was an oceanographer. And he really, really influenced just by watching this young Stephen. And so that's what kind of helped cause him to go into his interest in the ocean, in art. There were so many different things that he really enjoyed. He liked army men. He started drawing, he saw a picture of some army men hugging and kissing instead of fighting during the Vietnam War. And so he was kind of drawing those things as well. So he did like to, he was influenced by the war in the way that during that time, it was especially in Southern California, there was a lot of juxtaposed turmoil going on. So here this young man started going into his marine science majoring after he was looking at like drawing, but he also liked marine biology. He was very fascinated by the ocean. He lived near the ocean. He did all kinds of different things. So the whole point here that I'm telling you is that it's, you think you're going in one direction, but or your children, but embrace something different. You don't start out famous. You don't start out a famous musician. You don't start rare. You don't start out a famous artist. Sometimes you have a tortured life, sometimes not so much. You are who you are. So where I wanted to go with this was looking at him and using him as an illustration that you can go down many paths. You can appear a certain way in life. You can be just the average person, just a kid. And you can show, if you look back in your own life and you look back in your children's life, there are rumblings of who you are, how you viewed life, the fact that his captivation as army for army men was more peaceful than it was more fighting, that his interest, his fascination in what he watched was oceanography. Now, it doesn't mean he would be an oceanographer, right? That's really important to know. Sometimes we say, oh, you have such a genius in art or in math, so we're going to push you in that direction as a child. And as I told you about, I've known many, many true child prodigies who were heads and just head and shoulders above anyone around them, or who were in college super early in their life because they had such a gift, but yet they were just, it was driven out of them. They got burned out. So it'll be interesting to see if he, what he says, what he talks about, what goes on with him during this particular trajectory of his life. But then going back to, he had studied under this Jules Engel, and Jules Engel was an American filmmaker. He was also a painter, an artist, a sculptor. And I am going to be very interested in reading about his life. He worked for Disney, and there was a particular period of time where his path crossed Steven Hillenburg's path. And in fact, Steven Hillenburg, he was his mentor and his teacher, and Ingalls was Hillenburg's mentor and teacher. And he dedicated the movie, the SpongeBob movie, to Jules Engel. But his idea, that his thought that anywhere, if you're aware, just be aware, and a cardboard sign or a wooden sign with some person who paints the inside of houses for a living to just warn you of not messing up the wet paint or not getting wet paint on you, that can be an inspiration for the beauty of, he saw beauty in it. It haunted him for the rest of your life. So my goal here today, and we'll wind up more tomorrow, going back toward the whole concept of the medical diagnoses and the psychiatric diagnoses that we have. Not that anyone, again, the caveats I want you to pay big attention to. No diagnosis and treatment. Do not just pull people off of medication. It can cause all kinds of problems. You can have very deleterious effects, very nasty effects from just ripping yourself off of medication, sometimes even seizures and death. So don't do that. But question yourself. Become your own anthropologist. As my family member whose child had this diagnosis started to reflect on themselves as a template. They start to reflect on their household. How do we do things? We're always together, but we don't always have eye contact. I'm always doing work on my cell phone. My spouse is always doing work on their laptop. My child is always doing playing by themselves a lot. Even though we do interact a lot too, we have our time, but there's something we need to tweak here. Also looking back at them as a template, the fact that how they were always approached by their family before we had all this spectrum diagnosis, and how their interest always seemed to be a little off. And they remembered that they remembered feeling a little off, even though their family couldn't see it because they still were very social. So we need to really be our own anthropologist. So now going back to what I said we were going to look at, I want to look at a person who was very famous. And what I want, I'm showcasing these people with mental illness and fame so that you understand that when they started out in life, they might have been told that they were like the woman in Shark Tank, who was told that Barbara Corcoran, that she would never amount to anything. She was dyslexic, but wasn't diagnosed for a long time. So she didn't know. She just flunked out of stuff. She didn't do well in school. She was awkward. She was socially awkward. But she became Barbara Corcoran. She became a real estate mogul before she became better known as the woman from Shark Tank. This Stephen Fry, who is a comedian, actor, a writer, a presenter, an activist, documentary. He was expelled from two schools. He was in prison for 3 months as a young man for credit card fraud. He was a rabble rouser. He had lots of difficulties, but he continued on in life with mental illness and became a very famous, and still a very famous, a very accomplished person, and especially in comedy. Now, isn't that beautiful that a lot of people who get through these things because their humor, because their ability to laugh at the absurdity of life, help them through? And you'll notice this in a lot of people. And he wrote this piece on his own blog that I referred to yesterday and we'll get to in the fourth segment, the last segment. But this gentleman came from a family who had grandparents and aunts who were all slaughtered in Auschwitz, in concentration camps. And we know, psychiatric science knows, or study anyway, knows that people who come from families who had trauma somewhere in their lineage, big trauma, and sometimes we won't know it. It could be rape, it could be murder, it could be incest. Sometimes you will see post-traumatic stress disorder and other mental illnesses come up in generations following them. So we'll discuss that a little bit, but I want to go into more of what he talked about on the other side of the break. I am your host, Dr. Michelle 573 for Bread 4.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you're with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. So we're taking a very odd and circuitous route, looking at diagnoses of children, looking at the pros and cons in a weird way. No way do we diagnose and treat. No way am I saying it's bad or good. I've seen medication work miracles for people who have suffered mental illness. Miracles, literally miracles, getting people back into life. Times where I literally in my training thought, this person makes sense why everything is so awful in their life. I mean, I would listen to their histories and I would think, my gosh. And I was told, just hold on. And these aren't, quote, happy pills like people say that they are. They're not happy pills. There's all kinds of problems fraught with all medications. All medications have side effects. And in fact, everything you want them to do is a side effect of the pill. You take a pill and one of the side effects is to get the effect you want, right? we call them side effects because we're singling out one of the things we want and we're causing, and all the other things we're are giving us, you know, maybe some issues we have to deal with. Some are good issues, some of them are bad issues. So just like one of the side effects of getting your thyroid back in order is that you will lose some weight that the thyroid dysfunction has caused you to gain, or you may get some hair back, or you may have less dry skin, or your thinking will clear up. But the targeted effect is to supplement or to put back in the body what the thyroid is not churning out. So that's just a little aside. All right. So Stephen Fry, again, I want to tell you this because as a child and adolescent, he had his issues. He had a family that was not necessarily an artistic family. He had grandparents who were killed in Auschwitz, which they had to, they were immigrants to the United States. His family, and you know, this was not an easy legacy. And with it came a lot of fear, a lot of, you know, just imagine those of you who grew up with parents from the Depression, no matter how great they are, because they are, it's a lot of them called the greatest generation, but a lot of them keep things, right? You know, we think that hoarding is part of old age. I'm wondering, I don't know, but the greatest generation are people who are now no longer part of us and are starting to disappear faster and faster, but they're still around. And a lot of those people will tell you during times of lack and in the Depression, living 10 to a room and not having enough to eat and having the parents have to do anything to feed the children, walking along the railroad track, collecting coal, all those things, which many of us don't have to deal with right now. It developed a mindset of hoarding, you know, like, well, maybe it'll be gone, so we better keep on to, we better get two of everything. Even the great Joan Rivers, the comedian, said that even in her success, after years and decades of success, she still bought two of everything. I heard her interviewed one time because there was always that thought, maybe it'll be gone. So when Stephen Fry was writing this article on his website, he said it's the bipolar illness. People with bipolar sometimes don't even know. And what he did when he thought about even suicide. Now, remember, he flunked out of school. So, you know, when he flunked out of school, he didn't do well in school. He stole a credit card. He ended up in 3 months of prison as an adolescent, and just all kinds of stuff occurred in his life. Plus, he had what later was diagnosed as bipolar, but he lived a long time not knowing what the heck. And so at one point he was so despondent in one of his lows. Bipolar is marked by highs and lows. Sometimes it's marked by just low and lower. But those of you who suffer with it know what it's like. And a lot of people a lot of celebrities have talked about having bipolar disorder and sometimes not wanting to keep on medication because they missed the highs that came with that. So I guess this is kind of ending this program on more about bipolar disorder, but I thought he had a really interesting thing. He said that he did not understand that what we call in psychiatry, suicidal ideation. That means they're not actively going to want to harm themselves or kill themselves, but they're always thinking about it. It's always that thought. It's always kind of pervasive, sometimes daily. And then we do ask about that in psychiatry, about suicidal ideation. They don't necessarily have the plan or the intention, but it's always in the back of their thoughts. And he says for as long as he remembered, he thought about ending his life, but not necessarily kind of in a vague way, but he did try it. And it was very, you know, it was very publicized when he did. But then he talked about, because he's an actor, so it's in his face. Do you remember reading Shakespeare? And do you remember Hamlet? Do you remember ever seeing Hamlet? And I remember in high school reading it, and that famous speech, and cartoons used to make fun of it. To be or not to be, that's the question, as he's holding that skull. And it made no sense to me. It was just, Shakespeare didn't make sense. I didn't get it. But it made sense to Stephen Fry. And that's what he said stayed his hand. He said, the time to take to read it slowly, the most famous phrase on the face of this earth about suicide, and to say it to yourself or out loud. He said, I don't have Hamlet's wit or Shakespeare's, of course, but every logical or doubtful step from line to line expresses better how hard I thought about the advantages and cursed, as I thought, disadvantages against suicide. The speech, for the most part, stayed my hand, as it did Hamlet's. Isn't that awesome? So if we have time, I'll read a little bit of it because I'm no Shakespearean orator. Then he says, but medicine, much as some don't like to hear it, can help. I am on a regimen of four a day. One is an SNRI, the other a mood stabilizer. I haven't considered suicide in anything other than a puzzled intellectual way since this pharmaceutical regimen, quote, kicked in, unquote. But I can still be sad. Perhaps you might go to my Tumblr page and see what Bertrand Russell wrote about his abiding passions. It's the last section of the page. I can be sad for the same reason he was, though. I do so much less about it. I'm sorry. Let me go back. I can be sad for the same reason he was, though I do so much less about it than he than that great man did. But I can be sad for personal reasons because I'm often forlorn, unhappy, and lonely. These are qualities of all human that all humans suffer from and do not qualify except in their worst extremes as mental illness. Okay, bingo. This is what I want to tell you. Ranges. We all have sadness. We all have quirks of our upbringing. We all have weird ways we view life. And we can look at it and take it and be all on it like flies on honey, looking at how we are not normal because we feel sad or we feel bad or we're lonely. Then he says, lonely? Question mark. I get invitation cards through the post almost every day. I shall be in the Royal Box at Wimbledon, and I have a serious and generous offers from friends asking me to join them in the south of France, Italy, Sicily, South Africa, British Columbia, and America this summer. I have 2 months to start a book before I go off to Broadway for a run of Twelfth Night there. I can read back that last sentence and see that, bipolar or not, if I'm under treatment and not actually depressed, what right do I have to be lonely, unhappy, or forlorn? I don't have the right. But there again, I don't have the right not to have those feelings. Feelings are not something to which one does or does not have rights. In the end, loneliness is the most terrible and contradictory of my problems. I hate having only myself to come home to. If I have to write if I have a book to write, it's fine. I'm up early in the morning and I even pop out for an early supper. I'm happy to go straight to bed, eager to be up and writing the next dawn. But otherwise, it's not that I want a sexual partner, a long-term partner, someone to share a bed and snuggle with on the sofa, perhaps. Although perhaps I do. In the past, I have had, and it has been most joyful. But the fact is, I value my privacy too. It's a lose-lose matter. I don't want to be alone, but I want to be left alone. Perhaps this is just a form of narcissism, vanity, over-demanding entitlement. Now he's questioning all these things. But you go back to his thoughts about what is said in Hamlet, and I'm going to urge all of you to find that most famous quote. All you have to do is Google to be or not to be. That is the question. That's all you have to Google. And then read this, because if you read it in the mindset that he's actually tormentingly in Shakespeare, is having Hamlet tormentingly inside, look and ask the question, which way is it better? Is it nobler in the mind to suffer the swings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of troubles and by opposing end them, or to die, to sleep, to be no more? So which is nobler? This was this agonizing question at this amazing play that I need to go revisit, that I used to just recite because we were taught to recite it. I don't know whether people are now or not. But to see how someone whose whole world and artistry and life is acting, is the theater in one form or another, comedy, Shakespearean, tragedy, documentary, to look at the outrageous of life and the inrageous of life, to look at what happens in life, and to be themselves facing that question and having the question they think is answered, only to find no, the opposite is true. The opposite, to live who you are fully. This is Dr. Michelle. We will continue this tomorrow. God bless you. Enjoy your beautiful day. Dr. Michelle, live.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.